When the prison replaced meat with the nation's most popular health food ingredient, the prisoners sued. This leads us to ask, is feeding soy to prisoners a cruel and unusual punishment?
Welcome to the award-winning Food Chain Show with your host, Michael Olson. Now, get ready for an hour of What's Eating What Radio.
Well, hello out there. You are tuned into the 752nd edition of the Food Chain right here on News Talk Radio. Or hey, perhaps you're among our friends over there on the island of Efate who are tuned in as we stream along on the Food Chain page at metrofarm.com. Well, whoever you are and wherever you are, welcome aboard. I am Michael Olson, your host for this hour of What's Eating What Radio with our own Miss Idaho, Nikki James on the controls. Nikki?
Good morning.
Folks, file this one under Michael Olson's third law of the food chain. Cheap food isn't. The cheap food we are talking about today is soy, which according to the Florida Department of Corrections is so cheap a prisoner can be fed three meals a day for $1.70. That's right, that's 56 6/10 of a cent per meal. That's cheap. And according to the federal government, soy is not only cheap, it's also heart healthy. In fact, soy is so healthy, it's now contained in just about every processed health food on the grocery shelves, including things like baked goods, breads, cereals, cookies, crackers, and energy bars, beverages, dairy-type products, meat, poultry, and fish products, and pastas. Yes, folks, soy is the cheapest and healthiest food in the land. But wait a minute. When the Illinois prison system began substituting soy for meat, the prisoners revolted and brought suit, which leads us to ask, is feeding soy to prisoners a cruel and unusual punishment? And who better to ask than the sponsor of this lawsuit, who just happens to be one of our favorite contrarians, Sally Fallon Morrell, who is the co-founder and executive director of the Weston A. Price Foundation. Sally, welcome back to the Food Chain.
Thank you, Michael. Thanks for having me.
Good to have you aboard. Weston A. Price Foundation. Now, for people who've been out there in the woods, people still don't know who you are yet. Not everybody, but we're working on it. So tell folks about Weston A. Price.
The Weston A. Price Foundation is a nonprofit nutrition education foundation. We were founded in 1999 to provide accurate information about nutrition. We have no ties with the industry, and our information is all science-based. We promote healthy fats like butter, lard, tallow, whole milk, eggs. We promote meat, grass-fed meats in particular. We promote raw milk, and we have been a lone voice in the wilderness warning the public about the dangers of modern soy foods, especially when eaten in large amounts.
Which really makes you a contrarian when you're going up against that industry, which is what
it is a hugely powerful industry.
Well, who pays the way for the Weston A. Price Foundation?
We are mostly supported by membership. 60% of our income comes from memberships of $25 and $40.
Mm-hmm.
And then we have other large donors, and we do get a few grants.
Good.
But we don't get any government money. We don't get any industry money.
No money from the soy industry, I take it.
Oh, of course not.
Okay. So you just returned from your Wise Traditions conference, and I've always wanted to ask you this question. What do you mean by Wise Traditions?
Well, we mean the wise traditions of our ancestors as far as food is concerned. We say wise traditions in food, farming, and the healing arts. The traditions that gave health, the traditions that incorporated the wisdom of the ages. And one of our mission statements is the scientific validation of traditional foodways. So we feel, you know, when the science matches the tradition, you have a pretty good sense that what you're doing is right.
And Weston A. Price was a dentist who went out and found people who were actually healthy and kind of chronicled what made them healthy, correct?
That's correct, and he looked at their diets. Now, the diets were all very different. You know, when you go from the tropics to the Arctic, you get all different types of diets. But there were some underlying characteristics. None of the diets contained processed food. All the diets contained animal foods. But the most important characteristic was the very high levels of vitamins and minerals in these diets, and especially three vitamins vitamins A, D, and K, which we get from the very foods that we're told not to eat, animal fats, organ meats, certain types of seafoods, egg yolks, and that kind of thing.
All of the things that Weston A. Price found to be good, modern food technology says not so good.
Well, modern government agencies are not good. I mean, one of our roles as an education organization is to show people the flaws in the current paradigm, which says that saturated fats and cholesterol cause heart disease and other diseases. And that's our number one mission, is to show people that this is absolutely false. These fats protect us from those diseases.
Now, Weston A. Price Foundation has become a backer of the prisoner's lawsuit in Illinois against a program started by former Governor Rod Blagojevich for substituting meat with soy protein. So why did you become involved in that lawsuit, Sally?
Okay, so it's kind of a long story. We, you know, our website has a lot of information about the dangers of soy.
Like hundreds of articles.
Yeah, hundreds of articles and hundreds of references.
Mm-hmm.
Starting with the FDA's poisonous plant database. Now, the FDA has since removed this from their website, but it used to be you could go into their poisonous plant database and put soy in, and you got over 250 references.
So you can't go out and eat raw soybeans. It's like a plant that you can't eat that's alive. You have to do something drastic to it before you can eat it, right?
Well, yeah, more on that in a moment. Just to say, we anticipated that this poisonous plant database would disappear, so we captured it. And there's a link to it on our website. So, you know, we've saved it from oblivion, so to speak. But here's the deal with soy. Soy is a toxic plant. All legumes are mildly to greatly toxic, and soy is one of the most toxic plants. It is very high in substances that block digestion, that cause undesirable blood changes that are very irritating to the digestive tract, extremely high in oxalates, and it is also high in these isoflavones, these plant types of estrogens, which are particularly toxic to the thyroid gland. Now, the Asians figured out, they first only used soy as a nitrogen fixer in the soil. They didn't eat it, but then they figured out that they could ferment the soy, a long natural fermentation, 6 months to 3 years, and that got rid of most of the toxins. It did not get rid of the endocrine disruptors, the thyroid-suppressing substances. But they use these fermented soy products in small amounts, very, very small amounts. It's 1 to 2% of calories in these diets, especially the Japanese diet.
1 to 2% is like a condiment.
It's like a condiment. So it's a few squares of tofu in your fish broth or miso in your fish broth. And it's interesting to me that these foods were usually used in a fish broth, and fish broth is about one of the most thyroid-supporting substances you can eat.
Hmm.
So there was contraacting
mm-hmm.
in the fish broth, yes.
Kind of a sweet and sour there.
One
took care of you and the other tore you down. So a neutral thing.
Right. Now, one interesting thing about fermented soy is that it's an extremely rich source of vitamin K, which tends to be lacking in Asian diets. So there was a good thing that came from this fermentation discovery in Asia.
Mm-hmm. And then how did that lead you into this whole thing about the lawsuit, though? Where did that come from?
So around about 2007, we started to get phone calls. The phone calls came into our office from people in this prison system. And what it was, since 2003, they had been on a diet that was extremely high in soy, about 100 grams of soy protein a day. Now, even the most ardent supporters of soy say no more than 20 grams a day, or the government's high point is maximum is 25 a day. And they were getting 100 grams a day, and they were experienced some really terrible health problems. First of all, digestive problems. Vomiting after eating, pain after eating, passing out after eating, terrible constipation, debilitating diarrhea, terrible gas. Now, you might think that's kind of funny, but when you're locked in a prison with a lot of people who have terrible gas, it's not very funny.
Well, we're gonna hold that thought if you can, because we're going to have to take a quick break. Folks, this is the Food Chain Radio Program. Today we're picking up a really interesting subject. A lot of prison systems, not only prison systems, but schools, public schools, are starting to use soy to replace meat because, well, it's cheaper. And they say that soy is a health food. The government says it's a heart-healthy food. And so it's cheap and it's healthy. So why not get rid of expensive meat and replace it with cheap soy? So, and yet when they did, we have a big problem in the prisons in that it's really upsetting or making a lot of bad gas in a real confined space. Things might blow up. Well, do stay tuned. We will be right back with Sally Fallon Morrell.
Get this. The average acre of farmland in or near the city limits may earn in excess of $123,000 per year. To learn how so much can be earned from so little, pick up a copy of Metro Farm, the guide to growing for big profit on a small parcel of land. Metro Farm is the PMA Ben Franklin Book of the Year Award winner by Michael Olson that contains over 500 pages of photos, charts, checklists, illustrations, and in-depth interviews. Metro Farm will teach you how to develop a strategy, survey markets, select crops, organize business, establish production, prepare for market, and make the sale. Metro Farm will teach you how others just like you earn a good living by growing high-value specialty crops for people who are truly appreciative. Abraham Lincoln said, "The greatest fine art of the future will be the making of a comfortable living from a small parcel of land." Get in on that future today. Pick up a copy of Metro Farm at bookstores, lawn and garden supply stores, 1-800-624-BOOK, or at www.metrofarm.com.
Well, talk about an explosive situation. Imagine this. Imagine being locked up in a confined place with an entire population of soy-eating prisoners. Look out. Might blow the roof off the place. And that's what we're talking about right now, is have prisoners confined in a place forced to eat soy. And they're rebelling, and they're suing for cruel and unusual punishment.
And they really are forced to, because they either eat it or starve. It's in everything that they're served.
And I guess it's in pretty much everything that we're served these days as well. I mean, I know you've had the opportunity to go to the natural products expositions that take place on the East Coast and the West Coast, but the last time I visited Natural Products West, the floor was just filled with soybean food.
So yeah,
everything,
yeah,
but all of this health food suddenly became soy food.
Right, right. Yeah, I mean, the modern processing does, excuse me, reduce the anti-nutrients somewhat, but adds other toxins. Modern soy foods are high in fluoride, high in aluminum. And that's what the prisoners are getting. They're getting soy protein isolate and textured soy protein. The patties that they used to get were all meat and actually contains quite a bit of organ meats. And we've talked to prisoners who've been in jail for a long, long time. They said they were perfectly healthy on the diet they used to have. Now the patties are about 70% soy protein with a little bit of meat byproduct.
So they've taken the meat out of it and replaced it with soy, and they're having a lot of trouble, and they're suing, and Weston A. Price Foundation is backing them up in their lawsuit. Now,
just to go back on the
sure.
health effects, I mean, the digestive problems are just the beginning. If they're on this for any length of time, they tend to develop thyroid problems with low body temperature, brain fog, and we talked to one fellow who was out now, and he had such serious thyroid problems from the soy diet, he's now on disability. And I think this is really critical to realize you're going to get these prisoners out of jail, and they won't be able to work or do anything constructive and will be a drain on the system because of poor health. We had another young man who got out at the age of 24. He'd been on the soy diet. He developed very serious problems requiring an operation on his stomach. And the doctor who examined says, you know, it looks to me like you've been poisoned.
Now, has there been any double-blind studies? I mean, prisons provide the ideal situation for double-blind studies. Has anybody ever conducted a double-blind study as to the efficacy of eating soy, of feeding prisoners soy?
That's a really good question. I don't know of any study that used human beings where one group got, say, meat and the other got soy and that extended that study for any length of time. What we have are studies with animals that look at one particular marker, say cholesterol levels, or epidemiological studies with people that might find some relationship between, say, eating soy and low rates of breast cancer. That's because Asians have low rates of breast cancer and they have some soy in their diet. Doesn't mean it's a causal thing. So that kind of study, the only place I know where one's going on right now is the Illinois and Florida prisons, because that's what the inmates are getting.
But that's what the inmate. Well, they could actually compare then that population of prisoners with a population of prisoners that gets meat in their diet and come up with some conclusions. But nobody's doing that, right? Because who would fund it?
Who would fund it? And it would be very expensive to do. I mean, you have to get in the prisons and take blood tests and so forth.
Mm-hmm. So, but there it is. So we really don't know what's going on, but from the circumstantial evidence that you've been picking up, there's something really untoward happening to prisoners who eat soy.
We're arguing that this is cruel and unusual punishment, that it causes serious, painful health problems, and on the long term, intractable, incurable health problems.
And there you are.
And we, you know, whatever you may think about our prison system, and this is not a move to reform our prison system, it's just to make sure that the constitutional mandate is carried out. And there have been Supreme Court decisions saying that prisoners have a right to nourishing and sustaining food. It doesn't have to be gourmet food, but it has to nourish and sustain them, and the soy diet is not doing this.
But how are you going to prove that then without your study? How can you possibly prove that, other than the fact that people are complaining, and of course prisoners will complain, do you have any way of proving that they're actually...
Oh, yes, we do, from expert testimony to our records on the prisoners themselves.
Okay, good.
This is we're leaving to the attorneys, but I think we have a very good case and a very good judge who wants to hear the science. He says, I want to hear the science of this case. So we have a lot of science on our side.
Well, okay, so the prisoners are being fed soy because it's cheap and it's the government says it's heart healthy.
You know, I want to just talk about being cheap for a minute.
Okay.
You said something very, very interesting. You said that the average food in the Florida prison is $1.70 a day. Well, the state of Virginia, they spend about $1 a day, much, much less on their prisoners. And that's because the prisoners raise their own food.
That's a question that that just jumps out and says, why aren't the prisoners growing their own food?
They absolutely should be. In Virginia, the prisoners raise grass-fed beef.
There you
on
go.
State park lands, and they have their own food processing places where they process the meat, they process vegetables and freeze the vegetables, they even make their own popsicles.
So they're learning skills, they're developing.
They're learning skills, and they're staying healthy, and there's actually money left over to sell to some of this meat to the Pennsylvania prisons. And this is what they used to do in Illinois. The prisoners raised their own meat, and they had a abattoirs where they worked and butchered their meat and provided the whole prison system. This is what we need to go back to with the prisoners.
Why did we go away from it?
You know, I think it's because these big contractors want to get in there and get their hits on
this money. Donate liberally to some congressperson's campaign fund, and there you go.
Yeah, I mean, Archer Daniel Midland contributed heavily to Blagojevich's campaign,
mm-hmm.
and the minute he became governor, he changed the prison diet.
And there, thus the soybeans, and thus the lawsuit from the Weston A. Price Foundation. You guys truly are the David going up against Goliath in this one. But
well, you know, it has a lot. The implications are much greater than prisons, because if we can win this one, we can get it out of the schools.
Well, and there you go. Tell us a little bit about the relationship of soy and schools before we go to the next break here. We just have a couple minutes.
Well, there's been a move to get more soy in school lunches. Already the meat, the ground beef, is 30% soy. So if your kids come home complaining of a tummy ache after eating school lunch, that's the first thing you want to look at.
Well, how do you look at that? What do you test
well,
for?
Well, you it's not that you test for it. You make their own lunches so they don't have to eat the soy and see if they still get tummy aches. But the new dietary guidelines put the green light to more soy in the schools. They've developed soy-based cheeses, which our government agencies tell us is going to be much better because they're lower in saturated fat. So soy replaces nourishing foods like meat and cheese in these school lunches.
And thus, if we can win this lawsuit, if the Weston A. Price Foundation can win the lawsuit in the Illinois courts, people will begin to take a look at the place soy plays in our diets. And ladies and gentlemen, soy plays a huge part in our diets now. It's probably what the health food industry is living on these days with all their processed and packaged health foods. If you look on the label, you see soy there. You see soy in almost all of the breads on the supermarket shelf.
Only 5% of the ingredients in the bread is soy and unprocessed soy flour.
So it's not just prisoners. It's not just school children. It's all of us. And we will be right back with Sally Fallon Morrell and the Weston A. Price Foundation and their lawsuit over feeding prisoners soy. Is it cruel and unusual punishment? Right back. Well, when the Illinois prison system began substituting soy for meat, the prisoners revolted and brought suit, which leads us to ask, is feeding soy to prisoners a cruel and unusual punishment? And what about our school children? And what about you and I? Because we're eating a lot of soy these days. And how on earth did all of that come into being so quickly? I can't remember seeing many soybeans being raised when I was a young kid on a farm, and it wasn't all that long ago. So where on earth did all these soybeans come from, Sally Fallon Morrell?
Well, it's a very good question, and it actually goes back to changes in food technology in the late 60s. When the food industry developed a new method for partial hydrogenation that got better results with soy oil than corn oil. And that's when they started to use soybean oil for all of the processed fats and oils.
And all of these things that we're now coming to the realization that are not all that good for us. We're talking about margarine,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah, we're talking about margarine spreads and the liquid oils. This is the number one cause. These are the number one cause of our health crisis in the country today. And so the soybean came to the fore for the fats and oils. And when you press a soybean for the oil, you're left with a high-protein sludge. And the industry thought, well, how can we make a profit on this waste product? And they spent millions of dollars figuring out how to process and purify the protein in the soybean. And what
how
they found
was... How to isolate it, right?
Yeah, how to isolate it. And what they found, and we have their original documents where they were talking about this, what they found was they knew that there were all these toxins in the soy protein, and they found that with high-temperature processing, they could get out some of the toxins, but the higher the temperature... And the more toxins they got out, the more they compromised the quality of the protein and the more new toxins that they formed. So they had to have a compromise, and they processed it at temperatures to get rid of some of the anti-nutrients, but not all. Anyway, so this is when you started to hear about soy being good for you. They deliberately marketed it to the upscale consumer concerned about their health. And then they said it'll be accepted by everyone if it's accepted by the upscale consumer. Oh, hard to say.
Yeah, so,
upscale consumer.
So did the government give it GRAS status, which is generally recognized as safe?
Safe. They applied for GRAS status for soy protein isolate in the late 70s, and the government turned them down.
The government said, turned them down?
Yes, the FDA turned them down.
The FDA turned them down?
they were concerned about one of the toxins that was formed called lysinalanine. And they said, well, if you use soy protein isolate as a binder in cardboard boxes, that's okay, because the lysinalanine will not migrate into the food. But you cannot use soy protein isolate in the food. We won't give you GRAS status for that. So here at the very early stages, they do not have GRAS status, which means they need to get approval every time they put soy protein isolate in a product, and they never have gotten approval. So their whole thing is illegal, actually.
Well, okay. Okay.
Well, what do you do about it? I mean,
okay. I see the light, said the blind man. So it's all illegal, and it's the biggest health food in America, and it all makes perfectly clear sense to me. Let me go through some of the things that have been said about soy and soy protein, and
okay.
Perhaps you can help us out. Here's
okay.
one that you've already helped us out. Asians consume large amounts of soy foods.
Yeah, this is not correct. They do consume soy foods. It's something that's typical of Asian diets. Usually these soy foods are fermented and used as a condiment. But they're used in small amounts.
Here's the most troubling one to me. Japanese housewives feed tofu to their husbands frequently when they want to reduce their virility.
Well, that's one of the folk things we heard, that if they're mad at their husbands, they feed them lots of tofu. You know, if they think their husbands are playing around. What we do know is that they used the soy foods in the monasteries to dampen libido.
Well, is that what they're doing in prisons?
Well, that's a thought. I can't comment on what their
motives are.
Yeah, right. But some of the men have documented growing breasts.
Wow.
Yeah. Now, by the way, you used the word that prisoners have rebelled. I want to stress that these prisoners, it's not that they've rebelled. They have gone through all the avenues that is open to them. They have filed grievances. They have asked for medical examinations. They've asked for thyroid medication and so forth. They've asked for soy-free diets. And in every case, they've been refused, at least in the cases of our plaintiffs.
Mm-hmm.
That means that there's a legal term. They have exhausted their grievances. And so they have no remedy left but to go to the courts.
I still like rebelled. I mean, they're rebelling against being force-fed soy.
Yeah, well, that's one way of putting it. But it's been a long and arduous process for these prisoners.
Well, I'm sure it has. Mm-hmm. Let's see. Modern soy foods confer the same health benefits as traditionally fermented soy foods. And when we talk about traditionally fermented soy foods, we're, of course, talking about the Asian way of eating soy.
Right, right. Well, for the modern soy foods are not a source of vitamin K, which is the one really good benefit for fermented soy foods.
And because? Why is that?
Well, vitamin K is formed during the fermentation process, and there's one soy food, miso, which is the highest vitamin K containing food there is. But, you know, a lot of people, natto, N-A-T-T-O. Now, natto is definitely acquired taste, has a very strong smell. I'd prefer to get my vitamin K from goose liver myself,
mm-hmm.
not natto. But none of those benefits are in the modern soy foods. You have to understand that these modern soy foods, the soy protein isolate and the textured protein, are produced in huge factories with enormous machines, lots of heat, lots of chemicals. This is not something that you can make in your kitchen.
And if you were to watch the process, would you be hungry for soy?
I don't think you would.
I don't think you would touch it
if you saw it.
Worse than watching sausage being made, right?
Yeah, and just as bad as watching the processing of the vegetable oils. That's a horrendous
another
process.
One. Soy foods provide complete protein. Now, we see, of course, all of these protein bars out for exercisers and whatnot. Here, have a protein bar and you'll feel much better. Tell us about the soy isolate or the protein isolates that they use that come from soy, and they're put into these all of these protein bars.
If soy foods were a complete protein, why do people who use soy in animal feed have to add lysine and methionine to the mix? It's because there's not enough in the soy for growth.
So when we eat a protein bar that's heavy on the soy, we're deficient in some of the essential nutrients that make the
amino acids
that make the protein viable then.
Right, exactly.
Okay, we're going to pick up a few more of these points when we come back with Sally Fallon Morrell. We're talking about soy being force-fed prisoners in the Illinois and Florida prison systems, but we're also talking about the soy that is now finding its way into our public schools and feeding our school children. And wait, it's not just prisoners and it's not just students, it's you and I, and we're eating a tremendous amount of soy. And what's going to become of us when we keep eating this stuff? Right back. Well, folks, we live here at the home port of the Food Chain Radio program. We live in a city where there are a whole bunch of vegans and vegetarians. And right now they're driving back and forth in front of the studio, flipping me the universal salute of disgust for talking about their soy. So what about the poor vegans and vegetarians that are basing their diet on these soy products, Sally Fallon Morrell, what about them?
Well, they're putting themselves at risk for digestive disorders, thyroid problems, endocrine disruption, even certain types of cancer like pancreatic cancer. I think they're very misinformed, and it's very tragic. And veganism, of course, is presented as a way to be spiritually superior to everybody else. And so even when these health problems show up, it's kind of hard to get yourself out of it.
Because it's not really about health anyway. It's about spiritual purity or something like that. Okay, well, I'll just leave them to their driving back and forth in front of the studio then. Let's talk a little bit about soy formulas for infants.
Yes, this is the very worst thing that's happened. They use soy as an ingredient in baby formula. And remember now, soy does not have GRAS status. We've tried to find out whether these formula makers have gotten pre-market approval.
And GRAS, of course, means generally recognized as safe. So the baby formulas have not been granted GRAS status by the federal government?
Not that we can determine. No one will answer our questions, so we have to assume that the answer is no.
If they're not recognized as safe, how do they get them on the market?
Money talks, you know.
It talks a lot, I guess.
Yes, and FDA is not stopping them. So you have all the naturally occurring toxins in the soy formula. You have the enzyme inhibitors, the digestive enzyme inhibitors. You have very high levels of manganese, which is a brain toxin to the infant. You have high levels of fluoride and aluminum. But of most concern is the very high levels of isoflavones. These are the plant types of estrogens. There are 10 times, a baby on soy formula gets 10 times more of these estrogens than an adult in Japan gets in a typical diet. And this is a very vulnerable, then this is as a on the basis of body weight. So
babies that are fed soy infant formula get 10 times more soy than an adult?
Estrogens. As a function of body weight. Whenever you're dealing with toxins, it's always a function of body weight. And this is a very vulnerable time in the life of the person. Little boys for the first 6 months of life have a testosterone surge, and they have testosterone levels equal to those of an adult male. And this is what programs the boys to express male characteristics at puberty. And the estrogens can dampen the testosterone. And in little girls, they're just flooding their bloodstream with estrogens. One study found that in soy-fed infants, the levels of estrogens were 13,000 to 22,000 times higher in the blood than children on cow's milk formula. And we're seeing in little girls, very early maturation, even breast development before and pubic hair, sometimes before the age of 3, but in many cases before the age of 8.
Are you kidding? Before the age of 3?
Three. We even had a mother write to us. She was feeding an infant, and she's breastfeeding an infant. And she herself was eating soy. And the infant started to grow these little breasts. And when she got off the soy and continuing breastfeeding, the breasts went away.
Let's go to the phones right now. Folks, phone numbers today, 831-479-1080. Let's go to Rose. Rose, welcome to the Food Chain. You're talking with Sally Fallon Morrell and Michael
Thank
Olson.
Thank you. I appreciate this. You're sort of close to a question I want to ask. Sally, have you had any medical and or research information on estrogen as it relates to females being negative in later life and developing breast cancer, and or people who have a high propensity for breast cancer because family members and such? What information do you have regarding soy?
Well, as a matter of fact, there was a company called Soleil which had petitioned the FDA to have a health claim that soy prevents cancer, and especially breast cancer. And we filed, a reply to that petition, quite a long document with many, many references showing that soy not only does not prevent breast cancer, but could actually cause breast cancer by a number of mechanisms. And we have a couple of studies showing that soy causes undesirable changes in the breasts that are precursors of breast cancer. So, it's nothing, definitive, but we were able to stop the health claim.
There you go.
I wish I wish doctors would be more aware of some of this. Are you getting your information out to the doctors and such, or the gynecologists and et cetera, and the radiologists?
A lot of them are recommending it, and this really does women a disservice. And especially because this is a time, when you get, later in life, you're much more vulnerable to thyroid problems.
Mm-hmm.
And the soy can exacerbate that.
Rose, can you hold on? We're going to have to take a quick break. Can you stay with us? Hold on. We'll be right back, folks. This is The Food Chain. Michael Olson, and we're talking about soy, all of that soy that's in our food, our children's food, and our prisoners' food. Right back. Well, what do you think out there? Is feeding soy to prisoners a cruel and unusual punishment? That's the question we have on the table today, and we're talking with Sally Fallon Morrell, who is the co-founder and executive director of the Weston A. Price Foundation. Also on the phone with us right now, we have Rose. Rose, do you want to finish up your line of questioning there?
Please, for both of you, I have a question, suggestion. For Sally, I wonder if she can get some good articles out in the Santa Cruz Sentinel and to all of our local doctors like at PAMF and the Dominican mm-hmm. group. And if you can hopefully have a summation of today's program on your email, which I get, and I'd like to share that, send that out to some of my friends.
Well, the program will be archived on the metrofarm.com website. There's a Food Chain Radio page there, and this program will be archived, so all you have to do is send a link to all your friends, and they'll get it, and we'll all be most appreciative.
Isn't it just like a little MP3? It's not. I never saw it written up. I never saw a written summation.
Well, it's an MP3. You just click on and listen.
Yeah, okay.
And Rose, if you go to WestonAPrice.org, mm-hmm. on the right-hand side, there's a it says Soy Alert. Click on that, and you will find articles there We publish a journal, and in every journal we have a story about soy.
And there's a lot of information there. You can read about soy till you get your fill.
Yeah, soy's effect on all sorts of different things. So.
Is that Western Aid, AID?
Weston, no. Weston, Weston A. Oh. Price Foundation.
Oh, okay. Westona Price
Foundation. Yep. Then away you go.
WestonAPrice.org.
Yep. Thank you very much for tuning in, Rose. Let's go quickly, while we can, to our friend Ben. Ben's got a comment. Ben, what do you think? Do you think feeding soy to prisoners is cruel and unusual punishment?
Absolutely. Where is the medical liability? How did this stuff get through the FDA to be approved? I've been studying this stuff for years, and I come to learn that it is genetically engineered. To what end? We just saw Evandin yesterday. Now it can't be used as a treatment for breast cancer. How in the hell did it get approved in the first place? Who's paying the FDA? And where in soy and in this Evandin type of products, where is the medical liability, and where are the orange jumpsuits for these people? Are they too big to audit and too big to question?
Well, there you go. There's the question of the day for you, Sal. What do you think, Sally? How did this stuff become legal?
I did not know that Avenda was soy-based. By the way,
it's not, but the question is there.
Okay. The genetic engineering, even without the genetic engineering, soy is a toxic plant. As I mentioned, it's in the poisonous plant database held by the FDA. But the genetic engineering does make it worse. It makes it much more difficult to digest. And I believe that genetically engineered soy is higher in the isoflavones.
So where's the medical liability? Who's going to get the bill? Us? Or as we go to our funerals? Or to the people deliberately and knowingly poisoning us?
Yeah, well, we're hoping to shift that liability from the taxpayer back to...
good luck on that one. Occupation medical labs for Monsanto. Yeah, I can see that one happening real fast.
Ben, thank you for the call. Sally Fallon Morrell, thank you so much for bringing our attention to a fact that one of the basic foundations of our health food industry is soy, and how that soy might not be as helpful as our government is leading us to believe. Thank you very much for joining us, Sally.
Thanks for having me, Michael.
And thank you all out there for tuning in the Food Chain. Do stay tuned next week for more What's Eating What Radio.
You've been listening to the award-winning Food Chain Show with Michael Olson. If your friends missed the show today, tell them to log on to the radio page at www.metrofarm.com for a listen. Now go out and find some food with a farmer's face on it and live. Your source for news, sports, traffic, and weather. AM 1080, KSCO, Santa Cruz, San Jose, Salinas, and Monterey.
CNN Radio. I'm Stan Case. Topping the news, senior military commanders in Libya say Muammar Gaddafi's son, Saif al-Islam Gaddafi, has been captured in the Libyan desert. CNN's Ben Wiedemann reports it's a major victory for revolutionary forces.
With him captured, that is probably the final nail in the coffin for those who still are out there in Libya hoping for Gaddafi's rule, if not by the senior Gaddafi who's now dead, but by his son, Saif.
Saif al-Islam Gaddafi faces an international charge of alleged crimes against humanity. Members of the Congressional Supercommittee are still talking behind the scenes about a potential deal to cut the deficit and avoid automatic spending cuts. CNN's Joe Johns reports not much is expected, though, by Wednesday's deadline for an agreement.
Why are they sounding so optimistic if behind the scenes people are really pessimistic? And the bottom line is, it's about expectations. And smart members of Congress know that the first person or whoever comes out first saying this thing isn't going to happen looks like they're quitting, and then they can be blamed at the end of the game for sort of stepping out of the process.
President Obama made his weekly address from Bali, Indonesia, where he just wrapped up a trade mission to the Asia-Pacific region. Obama says this week's trade deals will be good for America's manufacturers.
They're powerful examples of how we can rebuild an economy that's focused on what our country has always done best, making and selling products all over the world that are stamped with three proud words, made in America.
And the president's due back in Washington Sunday. Firefighters in northern Nevada are hoping for calmer winds as they battle a wildfire that's damaged more than 20 structures. City officials in Reno said Friday about 9,500 people have been asked to leave their homes. States of emergency were declared in Reno and the rest of Washoe County. This is CNN Radio.
Come into the Home Depot today for pre-Black Friday savings on a wide selection of appliances. You don't have to wait until the day after Thanksgiving for savings like $200 off your choice of a front-load or top-load washer from LG. They're just $499 each right now. So beat the crowds with pre-Black Friday savings on appliances today. More saving, more doing. That's the power of the Home Depot. While supplies last, U.S. Home Depot store for details.
At Green Mountain Coffee, we believe in the power of a great cup of coffee.
I realized every problem can be an opportunity if you look at it the right way.
We selectively source our coffee from across the globe. Then we carefully roast and blend it perfectly. So all the inspiration we put into it helps you get a little inspiration out.
I realized sometimes a great cup of coffee is all I need to get a new perspective.
Green Mountain Coffee, a revelation in every cup. Available in bags and K-cup serving for Keurig single-serve brewers.
Grainger, the best resource for all your industrial supply needs, offers a service called KeepStock, which helps businesses manage inventory, making it much easier to know what you have and quickly order what you need. They can help you put a method to the madness of tracking, organizing, and ordering any size inventory, turning even the most intimidating storage space into an easy-to-maintain supply paradise. To find out more, visit Grainger.com/KeepStock. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
For over 150 years, TAG Heuer Swiss Luxury Watches has brilliantly fused technology with design. And Jared, the Galleria of Jewelry, has an incredible selection to choose from.
That's Jared!
Time and again, TAG Heuer has revolutionized watchmaking with luxury sport timepieces, including the sleek avant-garde Link collection and the vintage glamour of the Carrera Heritage. Now at Jared.
It can only be Jared!
Find a Jared store or shop anytime at Jared.com.
Good morning, everyone. You're tuned into KSCO 1080. I'm Nikki James. Got your forecast here. Looks like we've got partly sunny today. High of 57 with west-northwest winds 5 to 10 miles per hour. Tonight's going to be partly cloudy. Low of 43. Southeast winds 5 to 10 miles per hour. We've got about a 70% chance of rain later this evening. The southeast winds are 5 to 10 miles per hour. Sunday, we're going to have some rain early, then showers on and off throughout the day. High of 61. East, southeast winds 5 to 10 miles per hour. Probably get about a quarter of an inch of rain tomorrow. And for your boater's forecast, the northeast winds are 5 knots. They're going to become southwest in the afternoon. Wind waves are going to be less than 2 feet. We got a northwest swell of 5 to 7 feet at 14 seconds. It's going to shift to the west 3 to 5 feet at 13 seconds in the afternoon. The swell will be less than 2 feet with patchy fog. Tonight out there, southwest winds 5 knots, becoming east 5 to 15 after midnight. Wind waves are going to be less than 2 feet and a west swell of 6 to 8 feet at 12 seconds. They're going to shift to the northwest 4 to 6 feet at 12 seconds right after midnight. And the swell will be less than 2 feet. Rain is likely. On Sunday, the east winds 10 to 20 knots, decreasing 5 to 10 in the afternoon. The wind waves 3 to 4 feet in the morning. They're going to become less than 2 feet with a west swell of 4 to 6 feet at 11 seconds. Showers likely and isolated thunderstorms. For current temperatures, I've got Monterey at 52 degrees and in Salinas it's 50 degrees.